good to be back with you. Thank you so much for your grace. And while I'm starting out kind of the introduction for the series, I'm going to invite David to pass out something that I almost forgot to include. And then when I was sitting up front and I was looking at my notes and I saw at the very end, I'm like, oh, crap, that's still in the trunk of my car. So you're going to get one of these cards. I'm going to explain what we're going to do with those at the end of the talk. But make sure that you have one of those with that cute little cartoon character that the lady at Staples, when I checked the order, she's like, oh, that's cute. And we want to embody that energy on that little cartoon dog of what it feels like to be in a safe bubble in a very, very loud and chaotic world. We don't just live in a loud world. We live in a world that is constantly offering us noise in the form of information, of words. And when something feels, when the world feels overwhelming, whether it's the news cycles or the notifications, our social media feeds, anxieties or endless opinions, something in us starts craving something quieter and truer. And so the series is not about escaping the noise. We kind of spent some time this morning in pre-talk coming at this from a lot of different angles. And it's important to point out that we oftentimes equate silence with passivity and non-action, whereas words are active and engaging. We remember people because of the speeches they gave, not because of moments of standing in silence. And that's the way that our brain processes information, but hopefully by the end of this morning, I will dismantle that thought that silence is passive, because I don't believe that it is. I believe that silence is incredibly active. It can be incredibly uncomfortable, we know. It's necessary for our souls to begin to process this world that we live in. We have to have space for silence, just like we need oxygen in our lungs. Mary Oliver said, to pay attention, this is our endless work. And I'm going to invite us to pay attention to our interactions with the loud world that we live in. So today we're going to start with the most basic practice in these coming 4 weeks, which is this practice of silence. And that is probably difficult for many of us. Perhaps it may have gotten easier or may get easier for you as you get older, as research tells us that the older we get more comfortable with space and silence. And there's almost a proportional lack of silence the younger you get. Any parents with young kids knows this to be true. The younger you are, there is almost a constant need for engagement, entertainment. And we crave things to fill these uncomfortable gaps in our world. And the first thing to point out is, yes, the world is loud, and we're addicted more often than not, if we are honest with ourselves, to that stimulation. As I mentioned, silence can be very, very uncomfortable. Silence is where our brain starts running. And one of the questions that we asked in pre-talk is what our engagement was, how we related to silence, and what are the different noises in our world. And many people mentioned the news cycles and things like that. And somebody said, well, I've got plenty of noise. It's just not outside. It's all in here. And we're very familiar with that, aren't we? Because when the noise turns down externally, it's like our thoughts begin to ramp up. And that can feel uncomfortable. One study actually demonstrated that if given a choice to sit in a room with no external stimulation or noise for 20 minutes of silence, or given a button that would administer a small electrical shock, many people chose to repeatedly shock themselves than to sit in silence. That's how uncomfortable some people feel with silence. We reach for stimulation because it's endless and it's frictionless, especially today. We used to wait in grocery lines and wait in lines at parks and just have conversations and just be human. And now we would rather pull out our phone and watch a video of a guy pressure washing his driveway than to engage with the world around us. That may sound like a joke, but it's highly entertaining to watch, isn't it? One of my favorite subreddits is this subreddit called Oddly Satisfying, and it's full of videos and things like that that until you watch it, you didn't realize, like, I enjoy watching people power wash their driveway. This is an entertaining thing. But we have now ramped up our endless sources of entertainment until there's all around us. And as Nobel Prize-winning bacteriologist Robert Koch in 1905, he said, the day will come when we have to fight noise as inexorably as we do cholera and the plague. And how oddly prophetic his words have turned out to be. Consider the sheer amount of sound that we and the noise that we surround ourselves with just to avoid this uncomfortable silence and to avoid silence. In our attempt to drown out the silence, we string ourselves along from noise to noise, entertainment source to entertainment source, endless places of stimulation for our mind to keep us in from feeling this uncomfortable source of silence. And we think that the less time that we spend in silence, that somehow it's not affecting us, and we don't realize how necessary it is for us. We're like the kid that you see in the pool when you were a kid there that, like, you know, the mom and the dad have come up with a game to tell him to, like, hold his breath, and so he comes down and he comes up with his goggles on. It's like, okay, how long was I down for that time? That was 35 seconds. Okay, I'm going to go down again. And he goes down and he comes up again. How long was it that time? Well, now it's a little bit less. And he keeps going down and down and down until he realizes that you can't keep holding your breath because eventually your body needs to regulate itself. And in the same way, we're surrounded by noise, by external stimulation, and we don't recognize how harmful this is to our nervous system, our sense of internal regulation, and how little space we're allowing for the seeds of transformation to come. Somebody used the phrase this morning of digesting noise in the pre-talk, and I loved that thought because it is such a great metaphor, such a great image. In the same way that when you eat a really good meal, like if you had the Dine with Nine this past weekend, anybody go to the Dine with Nine and eat until you were like stuffed? Like, we were so full from our meal and we still managed to save room for dessert. It was not that full, but like you're so full and you're so stuffed and you can't possibly take any more. After the effects of traffic-related noise in Europe, the World Health Organization labeled noise pollution as a threat to public health. Your nervous system may be telling you that you need more distractions, but in reality, that constant auditory stimulation is actually bad for you. Noise pollution is defined as any loud or inescapable sounds that jeopardize the health of human beings or animals. So we typically think of noise pollution from the overpasses and freeways and airports, and that's an easy low-hanging fruit. But there's a growing research around the fact that there is a increased amount of low-grade noise, background noise, that is making our planet less serene and making it harder and harder to escape and find more areas of quiet and solitude. The cost is chronic stimulation, which burns out our nervous system. The cost is a stress response, which leads to anxiety, low-grade depression and and agitation, poor sleep, and heart disease. These are all very real-world consequences. There was one study, a landmark study that was conducted in the 70s, in which children were in a school that was near a railway track. And the school was set up in such a way that the classrooms that were closest to the railroad track were at one end, and the classes on the other end were much further away. One side was within earshot of the tracks, and the other was not. And what they found is that over time, the children closer to the railroad tracks, closer to the constant and repetitive noise, had less productivity, decreased grades, more agitation, and when they moved the classrooms back, it all went away and leveled it out. We don't recognize how much the stimulation affects us. And sometimes our brains can even tell us that we need more of it in the way that it tells us that we need to eat one more donut after we've already stuffed half a dozen down our throat, right? And if we listen to our brain, we have to stop and say, well, do I really need another donut? Do I really need to entertain myself for these 90 seconds that I'm standing here? Or is this perhaps a moment that I can carve out to allow silence to reign? From the Native American and Indigenous perspective, there was a Sioux scholar named Ella Clara Deloria. And this is what she has to say about sound and silence and the way that the Sioux culture approached noise, approached sound. She said, people should regard their words as seeds. They should sow them and then allow them to grow in silence. Our elders taught us that the earth is always talking to us, but we should keep silent in order to hear her. There are many voices besides ours. Many voices. The idea of planting your words as seeds and then allowing them to grow in silence requires such wisdom, such maturity. This past week, I reconnected with my spiritual director companion. This is a phrase that describes spiritual companionship or spiritual direction that has come out of mostly the Catholic Church, but it has grown to a broader, more expansive term. So we laugh because we don't really call it spiritual direction or companionship, but whatever it is, we've been doing this now for 6 or 7 years. He's been with me through some very pivotal transitions. And as I talked to him this past week, he reached out after news of my most recent transition, and he asked to talk to me just as a friend. He said, this is not a spiritual direction session. We're just going to talk as friends. And so I spent a lot of time. This was on Zoom. He's down in Indianapolis. He's a dear, sweet, old gay man that has probably had one of the more impactful relationships in my life, especially in recent years. And one of the things that I appreciate about him, I was reminded of in our Zoom call, because I asked him a question, And he did something that he does so frequently that I didn't quite recognize it until I started paying attention to it. I asked him a question, and he's like, and he'll close his eyes, which most of the time means he's thinking. Sometimes he has fallen asleep if I've been talking especially long. But I asked him this question, and he said, And he just closed his eyes. And he sat there. And he said, I'm gonna sit in silence for a second here as I think about this. And he probably sat for a good 30, 40 seconds, just with his eyes closed. And then he proceeded to share. And I respect that so much because there are so few people today, myself included, that actually allow our words to be birthed from a place of silence and contemplation. We rush so quickly into sound and into noise, into words to fill the empty space. So what happens when we create these conditions to allow our nervous system to have this gap, this space? Interestingly enough, we experience several things simultaneously. Neuroscientists have found, and I found this to be interesting, we would assume that the hippocampus and the parts of our brain that process auditory stimulation and sounds that come into our ears, that when those sounds go away, that just like a waveform meter, you would assume that it would go quiet. What we found actually to be true is neuroscientists found that that same part of the brain activates as much for silence as it does for sound. Your brain processes silence in the same way that your brain processes sound. We also know that silence is a necessary and essential part of being human. As a matter of fact, of being a creature on this planet. I just am about 3/4 of the way through a book. I think it's called Deep Water. And there was a chapter talking about the increased volume of the oceans, the noise that we are polluting the oceans with, and the creatures who have incredibly sensitive hearing that are being inundated with all of these unnecessarily loud sounds. Nature teaches us that we need space to allow our nervous system to downshift. We need silence in order to allow our thoughts to percolate, our thoughts to digest. And just like those of us who ate that big meal at Dine with Nine and then sat and had to digest for hours, perhaps your body is asking you for more space to digest the things that you're hearing and these inputs that you're receiving, so that you can actually process them, learn from them. As we talked about in pre-talk, this is not a passive sit back and do nothing approach. If anything, those of us engaged with social activism right now owe it to ourselves and to this world to care for ourselves and to cultivate that sense of peace and well-being that we are offering to the world. If there is to be peace, let it begin with me. And if what the world needs right now is less noise, we have the opportunity to lead by example, to embrace times and moments of silence. We assume that, as I said, sound reducing would result in diminished activity. It actually is still processed by our brain. Another interesting thing that happens is that silence has been shown to downshift the body, to decrease our heart rates, our blood pressure, and to reduce stress hormones like cortisol. Any of you who have ever been in a stressful situation and have sat down and closed your eyes and just breathed in silence has experienced the transformative power of your own brain, your own mind, to control, to regulate your sympathetic and your parasympathetic nervous system, to allow your body to go from an elevated point of stress and reduce it down. It actually has a measurable effects on our body. And it has an effect on our ability to think and to process clearly. Albert Einstein was famous for saying that I think 99 times and I find nothing, and then I stop thinking, swim in silence, and the truth comes to me. Perhaps you've experienced that as well. The thoughts, the little tidbits of information, these things that come into focus for you that only happen when you create the space for them to emerge. Silence has even been shown to increase the production of new neurons, brain neurons, in mice, that the space for silence was a necessary component of neurogenerative growth for our brains. More than just relief comes from noise. Silence is regenerative for our bodies and for our minds. Hermann Hesse says, within you there is a stillness, there is a sanctuary to which you can retreat at any time. It may get more challenging in our busy, noisy world. And thanks to technology, we have tools like noise-canceling headphones, which are a wonderful blessing of technology, in my opinion. My noise-canceling headphones go with me so many places. And sometimes it's okay to sit in the noise and to be in, like, for example, a busy coffee shop, and to allow that background noise to just kind of like be present there. But then at other times, there is such tremendous relief that comes from being able to just escape in silence, to close your eyes, to remove those external stimulations, and then to go within. Because there's still a lot happening. As somebody pointed out in pre-talk, we look outside in the winter right now and we see no activity happening. It looks dead and cold and no movement, but we know that there are things happening below the surface. Those trees, those plants are not dead, they're just dormant. They're doing what plants do. They're creating the space, they're embracing the season that they're in. In these quiet moments, our sense of self becomes more pronounced as our thoughts turn inward. And this can be a double-edged sword because it forces us to ruminate sometimes on things we would rather not think about. But it can also bring forward some new ideas. There was a Harvard Business study that talked about how essential boredom is for healthy human development. From kids to adults, this researcher said, leave room in your day, in your week, in your life for nothing. Experience boredom, preferably at least daily, and incorporate that into your life. Because what we've found is that boredom is actually very fertile territory for creativity, for new ideas, for the processing of older thoughts. In the same way that our brain requires sleep and that REM cycle when we go to sleep and we process thoughts at night and are able to think about them with more regulation. Silence and space gives us the room, yes, to experience maybe some boredom, perhaps some racing thoughts, some intrusive thoughts. And then from there comes the opportunity to sit with that and to say, what is it that I am thinking? What is it that I am feeling? Why do I feel this need to fill the silence? Why do I feel guilty about not doing anything? Why does this feel so passive and empty and helpless? And what does that say about me and my addiction to this fast-paced, noisy world? I want to close with this quote that's in your bulletin from Rumi, who has been a dear friend to me, is a guide, especially in recent months, as I've been spending so much time with his writings. And Rumi, that Sufi mystic poet, says this about silence. He says, "This silence, this moment, every moment, if it is genuinely inside of you, brings what you need. There's nothing to believe. Only when I stopped believing in myself did I come into this beauty." I love this part. Sit quietly and listen for a voice that will say, "Be more silent." Die and be quiet. Quietness is the surest sign that you have died. Your old life was a frantic running from silence. Move outside the tangle of fear thinking. Live in silence. So if you have that little card, I want you to hold it up. Make sure everybody has one of those little cards. Here's my invitation to all of us this week to embrace a focused, targeted period of time of silence, and then just write about what the experience was like. We're going to give you the opportunity to self-select. I'm going to give some of you the chance to carve out 30 minutes of silence, and maybe for some of you, you're like, easy peasy, I do that all the time. And we'll go all the way up from there, but we'll kind of ask you to just sort of like commit. So we'll do 30 minutes. We'll do an hour, a half a day, like 3 to 5 hours. And anybody who wants to try like maybe a full day of silence this week. All right, we'll see. It's going to be challenging. We'll see. So first off, who wants to try like 30 minutes of silence this week? Who thinks that they can handle that? Hold up your card if you think you can do that. Okay. All right, so you're committing that. So write that down on your card, maybe if you have a pen. 30 minutes. Let's go for an hour. Anybody want to try an hour this week? We got some hour takers. Good, good. Okay. Anybody really daring want to stretch it out to like a half a day? Half a day. Okay. We got three half days. Not missing anybody? You can pick 3, 4, 5. This is not about bragging rights as much as it is just giving ourselves a challenge and seeing what comes out of this. And then does anybody want to tackle a day, a whole day of silence this week? This is a big ask there. Yeah. Smart. Yeah. So what this silence will look like for you is going to vary. I mean, you know, maybe your silence is, if you're a mom, like I'm sitting here and like kids are playing in the other room and stuff, and your silence does not necessarily have to be the absence of noise, even though we're trying to move that direction. Sometimes silence might mean just sitting with the world as it is. Maybe it's at you in line at the grocery store and there's all these conversations and you're just there with your mouth closed, your eyes and your ears open. But we want to create the space to live in silence, as Rumi said, to die and to be quiet, to sit quietly and to listen for a voice that says, "Be even more quiet," to embrace what the silence has to offer us in the ways that we can grow during the season. Thank you, my friends. Hannah?